All right, welcome back to another episode of the Life 2.0 podcast. This is John St. Augustine. Once again, time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor, make sense out of the senseless, if at all possible, and find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. So I'm coming off a self-imposed hiatus from this podcast. I find a couple, three times a year, I have to take a little bit of a break. Sometimes they're about a 2-3 week break somewhere in there, but there's always a time where I'm doing other projects. And then this, even though it's a major focus for me, has to take a back seat. And I find that when I step away from the microphone from this podcast, it's a good brain break for me on a lot of levels. I've always thought that it was important, at least to my mind, to not just get on and randomly throw stuff up on the air just because I think I can. It's not really in the air anyway. It's a podcast, but you get my drift. And while there's been a lot of headlines that I would have liked to address, I am really committed to sticking with the lifelines, and those are far more important. So as we are in this political time of upheaval, which is not unusual, maybe a little bit more amped up than in the past, but this is the time of year, 4 years into the current president's administration, that a challenger will come along and all that follows with that. Not going to talk about any more about the politics at all. I have to tell you that comes to nothing for me. And there's a huge reason for me taking this stance. I've done it more and more over the years. I find the process of picking our elected officials, getting more and more, a little more challenging, and the whole concept of how much money goes into this and where that money goes and what happens to it and what the purpose is, it leaves me pretty dry. And the bottom line is, no matter who you think should be president or will remain president, all you can do is vote. All the rest of it really is just a tug of war. When you think about it, there is nobody who changes their mind. All the arguments for and against just are like an endless game of ping pong. And the bottom line is you vote. So for me, I step away from that. That's the one reason that I decided to not venture into those waters. And the other reason is because a friend of mine passed away about a week ago from the recording of this show. And he was only 60 years old. His name is Joe Laurinaitis. You may know that name. If you're a wrestling fan, for sure you'd know that name. He was one half of the tag team of the Road Warriors, which were the most dominant tag teams in the 80s and 90s in professional wrestling. And by all accounts, is probably the most greatest, I should say, tag team of all time, depending on who you ask for. Dick the Bruiser and the Crusher right up there. But Joe died at the age of 60 in a resort in Missouri, spending time with his wife, and he was here one day and gone in that same day. And I used to say tomorrow is promised to no one, but neither is today. So when you think about, or at least for me, when I think about what I'd rather spend time talking about and around, I would hope that if this is my last day, I'm not sitting here deciding, you know, what I think should be said about any kind of politics or presidential aspirations or all that other bullshit that goes on. It's just the same shit, different year. And while that may sound a little apathetic on my part, I'm very clear on the fact that I have the right to vote. I will do that. And I'll shut up about the rest of it. There are things that every president that I've ever, you know, watched in the Oval Office, I've not agreed with, or some things I have. That's how it works. So outside of all that stuff, I thought that I would take time to kind of break out of my hiatus and talk about Joe. And talk about Mike Hegstrand, who was his partner, died in 2003. He was 46 of a heart attack. And spend a few minutes thinking about that and some amazing stories that I can tell you now that the statute of limitations has run out in some sense. And really the lessons that I learned from those guys. If you have a copy of my book, Living an Uncommon Life, there is a chapter on the Road Warriors and about Joe and Mike and what great friends we were at the time back in the this was the early to mid 1990s, as their career was just kind of starting to decline a bit, as it's inevitable in every career. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so interesting how, you know, I was a wrestling fan growing up as a kid. My dad had every wrestling magazine known to man. And on all, all the greats, you know, Gorilla Monsoon and Bruno Sammartino and Wilbur Snyder, the man who, you know, created the abdominal stretch. Nobody could survive the abdominal stretch if Wilbur Snyder put it on you. Pepper Gomez, the man with the cast iron stomach, you know. This was great stuff. And when I was a kid, I'd go to church on Sunday to the Irving Park Presbyterian Church. And after church, my friend Artie and I would go to his house, walking distance to the church, and we'd sit down after services, and his mom would always have apple slices. Mrs. T would always have apple slices, fresh made. I mean, you walk in the house on a Sunday after you got the church in from Reverend B.G. Sills, who just brought it like nobody else's business. You walk into the house, and there was the smell wafting through of apple slices, freshly with that glaze on top, man. And we'd sit in the kitchen. She'd put the whole thing down, like an 8x12 pan, right? Of these, and just, she'd made it for us, just Artie and myself. We'd sit there at the table, and right at the end of the table was this tiny little black and white television set that I think had a radio on one half and the TV was in the other half. You remember these? And had a real long antenna. So that's where they would eat dinner. But on Sundays, they put a TV there so we could watch wrestling. And man, it was Bob Luce's wrestling from Chicago. And, you know, the worst commercials you've ever seen for Ben's Auto Sales, where they would bend over backwards to make a deal. And I remember Bobo Brazil, who was a black wrestler back in the day, and he would always push some place called One Stop, where you could get beer and chitlins by the case. Oh, God. So anyway, wrestling was always, a big part of. I never watched it much on TV, you know, the rest of the time. Just those Sunday mornings was a big thing. My dad had those magazines, and I don't remember the first time I heard about the Road Warriors. It would have been probably when I was in the service in around 1980, and we must have turned it on at the Coast Guard Air Station, Chicago, on sometime, and these guys were unheard of in their day when they broke through. You know, wrestlers were big guys. There were some huge guys like Haystacks Calhoun, who was about 450 pounds. He had a big chain around his neck with a horseshoe hanging off it. But Animal and Hawk came onto the wrestling scene, and these guys were fast. They were built like, you know, bodybuilders. Joe was 6'2", 300 pounds, 305 pounds, upwards of 310 sometimes. Mike was like a human missile. He was 6'3", 275. And both of these guys looked like they were sculpted out of, you know, stone, and fast and mean. And so they were the perfect heel to come onto the wrestling scene and just beat the living shit out of everybody that got in their way. And that struck a chord with me. You know, when I grew up in Chicago, we'd kind of act like that on the street. So, and they were actually billed from Chicago. Joe was originally from Philadelphia, and Mike was from Minneapolis, but they billed them as they were from Chicago, Illinois, with a combined wrestling rate of 585 pounds. I can remember it to this day. And I started watching these guys thinking, man, they look like the guys I'd work out with in the gym, but they were in the ring, and they had these outfits on. You know, they had the leather outfits with the studs in them. And at one point, they switched over to football shoulder pads with huge spikes in them, and they painted their faces, and these two guys were just a sight to behold. So I watched them for a few years, and I would never have guessed. Oh, that's why they're in the book. I would never have guessed that our paths would cross years later. I was working with Walter Payton on many of his events, and one of the big ones was a golf tournament every year. Walter was an incredible golfer, and it was a big deal outside of Chicago. And I knew, and again, I don't know how I remember how I met some of these people, but I met Mr. Perfect, the late, great Kurt Hennig, who was a wrestler. I think what happened is that somebody, I gave a people who were putting the event together a list of athletes I thought would help draw crowds. And back then, the pro wrestlers were just drawing huge crowds. And so this would have been 1993 that Kurt would have played. And he says, hey, I got a friend of mine who loves, you know, golf, and he's a great guy, and his name's Joe Laurinaitis. He's the Road Warrior Animal. I said, you got to be kidding me. So the next year, Joe came down. So that would have been 1994. And we hit off really well. And then I got invited to play, even though I was not, I don't know how this stuff happens, but I got to play in some celebrity golf tournaments before I was, quote, ever a celebrity. But Matt Blair, who was an outstanding linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings, also did a big golf event every year up in Minneapolis. And he invited me to play. And so I came up there and dragged Tony Galbraith along with me, who is a longtime friend of mine, still is, played 12 years in the NFL, played with Matt on the Vikings and played for the Saints and the New York Giants in Super Bowl 21. So he's had a pretty good career. So anyway, we all kind of knew each other and went up to Minneapolis. And there's a couple stories I could probably get into, but I'll leave those alone. But the one I do think is worth sharing is the party before the golf outing was at a club that was owned by Prince, the late great musician Prince. And it was there that we all kind of congregated. And, you know, it was a who's who of baseball, basketball, football, hockey, boxing, you name it. Men and women that were great athletes were all part of Matt's event. And there was Joe Laurinaitis again. So we reconnected. And after a while, we're kind of standing around in this, four huge guys walk in. These guys all had to be 7 foot. I'm not kidding. And I thought, what is that, like half the, the basketball team or something? But it turned out they were all Prince's bodyguards. They were so big and he was so small, you couldn't even hardly see him standing in with these guys because they were giants. But anyway, that was my only glimpse of Prince. And pretty soon Joe's like, let's get out of here. So we took off, got in his truck, went out and had a steak dinner and just started to become really good buddies. And that's where it began. And shortly after that, I met Mike, who they were still wrestling. And so on this journey began, this adventure, the three musketeers, so to speak. And I learned real quick how difficult the wrestling business is. You know, you sit back and watch it on TV and, you know, whether these guys are bleeding or get hit with a chair or whatever, the outcomes of the matches are assured. How they get there, not so much. And the pounding it takes on the human body to pull this off upwards of 300 days a year and the travel that goes into it is just mind-boggling me. There's no other athlete on the planet that does that, to my knowledge. It's just constant. In order to earn a living, especially when you're at the top, you just have to keep going. So I remember sitting down to dinner one time with these guys, or breakfast, I guess it was, and they were done eating practically before I started on my plate. I'm like, what is the deal? They were so used to eating and getting on the road to get to their next place to get a nap or whatever. They rarely tasted their food. It was like a couple of, Caterpillar steam shovels just hammering this food down. And so the adventures were many. And the memories I have of them are just thick for me. And when I put that chapter about Mike and Joe in the book, it was really about their partnership, how they learned to work in tandem, and how they had to overlook to a great degree each other's shortcomings and focus on their strengths and not so much their weaknesses. Two very, very, very different individuals. Joe was the consummate rock solid guy. You know, rock solid in business, rock solid in relationships, had a great head on his shoulders. His shoulders were really wide, so he needed a great, great head. And you could have a conversation like we're having right now, no problem. His father to three kids and just as solid as they get. I can remember meeting him in Minneapolis and then picking him up at the airport, taking him home. He just got off a flight from Japan wrestling for 2 months. He took a 20-minute nap and then went to his son James's football practice, you know, without missing a beat. And all that time with football paid off because James Laurinaitis went on to play 8 years in the NFL with the Rams and the Saints. So, and it's very surreal for me over the time that I've known these guys. You know, I can remember picking James up and throwing him, you know, over my head, like launching him into the pool. I don't think I could get away with that these days. But Joe was as solid as it comes. And Mike was just the opposite. Mike, you needed a tether just to keep the guy on the planet. He was flying around all the time. And I think when they did their finishing wrestling move, it was called the Doomsday Device, Joe would pick the guy up and Mike would jump off the top rope and just, you know, knock the guy's block off. And I think that really says who they were. Joe was the guy who would lift everything that was from the ground up, and Mike would come along and kind of clean up. And Mike was all over the map. And he had his demons, well documented, nothing new here, whether it was alcohol, drugs, you name it. This is a guy who was literally swinging by the trapeze without a net all the time. And I never, but with that mind, I've never saw him in difficulty, meaning I'd never had to deal with some of that stuff. The most, well, there's a couple of memories that come to mind with Mike. We were in Texas, and we were working on a product that was called, Extreme Measures. And it was a supplement, a bodybuilding, powerlifting type supplement that a bunch of people were put together, and they wanted us to, or one of those guys to represent it. And I was working with them on the managerial part and business deals and things like that. And so they flew us to Texas, and you should have seen the three of us in this hotel room. They gave us this suite, you know, and hilarious. I'm sitting there, you know, getting ready to meet the people. I can't remember the name of the sporting goods company that wanted to carry it, but it was a big deal. It was a big meeting with big people about big money and big this and big that. And I brought some of my best stuff with me, my clothes, and I'm ironing my slacks and my shirt and getting a tie ready. And these two guys are sitting in their Zubaz workout pants and tank tops. That's it. And painting their faces because they had to be in character. And I remember getting to the, I can't remember the name of this place, but it was a pretty big outfit in Texas. And our driver shows up. We get in his truck. We drive over there. And of course, all the way there, you know, Mike's got to stick his head out and yell at people on the streets, you know, and he had that, what are you doing voice kind of thing. So hilarious. We get to the meeting. And Jesus, one of them kicks the doors open to the place. I mean, they're in full character. These are the Road Warriors, you know, Legion of Doom and all that. And one of them kicks the door open, and there was like a boardroom there, and they take us down to the boardroom, and we walk in, and you know, these poor people weren't prepared. They thought we were having a business meeting, and we were, but they didn't expect these guys to walk in, you know, ready to snack on danger and dine on death, as they always talked about. And the meeting got really interesting pretty quick. And at one point, we're going back and forth, and we came up with this slogan. I think the idea was that, you know, you want to get people to use this stuff, obviously. And these guys were very forceful pitch men. And I came up with the slogan, eat this. I can't do it like Mike did it. And so at one point, they said, you know, what are you thinking about as far as the commercials and this and that? And I said, well, here's what we think. And I took the bottle of Extreme Measures and I slid it all the way to the end of it. And it went down in slow motion, man, slid the end of that table. Mike grabs it, full gear, face painted, you know, spikes sticking out. And he goes, eat this. And they all said, okay. It was a great slogan. But the funny part was after that, as I think about all these years later, I believe that the product, we got it in there and it ran for a while, did real well and all that stuff. We all made a few bucks. But after the meeting, we were going to dinner somewhere. But before we're going to dinner, they want us to play golf. Sure, we'll play golf. So they get cleaned up. We go to some golf, you know, private club. And everybody gets cleaned up. I bought like a pair of shorts and stuff while I was there, so I got to get out of my dress clothes. And so they get us all outfitted with everything, you know, top-notch clubs and the whole thing. But Mike Hawk won't wear long pants, so he's wearing these, you know, his wrestling pants. And they put Mike and I in the cart, and we're driving around, and they start bringing drinks to us. And I'm drinking Wild Turkey on the rocks and a Coke Chaser. And Hawk is drinking Wild Turkey on the rocks with Wild Turkey on the rocks as a chaser. Had to be 110 degrees in the heat, and it doesn't take long to get a little giddy. And I'll never forget a bunch of people coming up to the cart and wanting Mike's autograph. And we're sitting there, and one woman said, you know, hey, Hawk, how come you're not wearing shorts like that other guy is? And Hawk says, one of the great lines, listen, sister, I got legs like a nun. If I take these pants off, you'll all faint. And I, you know, it's a practice line. It was so damn funny at the time. The only other thing that I remember from that golf outing was that I teed off at one point and I hit a pole, a utility pole that was somewhere about 150 yards to the right of the hole. And then Mike teed off and hit the same pole. I think we called it a day after that. But it was quite a thing. And one time I had Mike and Joe and Erica Kern, who was a champion bodybuilder. We were all kind of in the same orbit at the time. And they all came to Chicago, and I brought them to my alma mater high school, Schurz, where they talked to the kids about their lives. And I mean, it was a big deal. They had 500, 600, 700 kids in the auditorium, and then they went room to room. And Mike would walk in and just walk into a room and sit down and talk with people. Joe did the same thing. So a lot of great memories from that time. And then, like a lot of things, you know, it was our time to go apart. I believe people come together for reasons and seasons. Sometimes they're very apparent and you know right away, and sometimes it takes a long time for it to show itself, but it always does. And over time, it was our time to go apart. I was in a business deal with them. The details really don't matter. And we couldn't come to an agreement, and I decided that it was time to part ways. And one of the more difficult situations I've ever been in my life. Listen, I've never not been able to take care of myself. I've never backed down from being in an altercation, which sometimes worked out for me, sometimes it didn't. But to go up and meet with Joe and Mike and say, listen, you know, there's nothing more we can do together. I think this is kind of time to go in, you know, different directions. Joe was all good with it. He gets it. He's a businessman. He understands. Mike, not so much. And I remember Joe coming down to get me in the hotel lobby right in Rosemont before they started wrestling. And he said, listen, you know, Mike's not in a very good mood. He's not real happy the way things are going. I get it's time to go apart. I understand that. But, you know, we have to just kind of go through this. Okay, fine. And so we get up to the door off the elevator, knock on the door, and the door opens. And there's Hoxton. And I'm 6'2". Mike's 6'3", but he's wearing cowboy boots. So he's 6'5". And I just kind of looked up at him, and I stuck my hand out. And I said, how you doing, Mike? And he shook my hand. And at the time, what we were doing, you know, we'd do a business deal, and then we would split, you know, the profits, and depending on how everybody was involved. And they were also paying me a monthly stipend. Not a lot, you know, like $1,500 or something that they chipped in. And so I could do in between business deals. And he looked at me, he says, you know, that money we're paying you per month. I said, yeah. He goes, it'd be better spent on me getting a hooker. God. Well, it kind of went downhill from there, but I eventually got out without any bodily injury. And that was that. And then in 2003, I got a phone call from Joe saying that Mike had died of a heart attack. He was only 46. And what I'd like to hear was that he had cleaned up his act towards the end of his life. He had gotten off drugs and alcohol, and he married a wonderful lady named Dale that I met a couple of times. And he had come to Jesus in his own way, so to speak. And he was moving some boxes and some things in their condo in Florida, and told his wife he was going to take a nap. He was a little tired and never woke up. 46. So when I got that phone call, I was living in Michigan at the time, and I knew I had to be there for Mike's memorial. And so I drove across. It was a long drive, thinking about how I had not stayed in touch, and I should have done that differently. And why do we always wait till we get a phone call that somebody's passed away to reconnect and all that? So I drove across, got to Minneapolis, got to Joe's house, saw everybody, his family, and I stayed at a local hotel there. And the next morning, there's a knock on the door, and it's Joe, and he says, hey, come on, we got to go get Hawk. I said, what? And Mike had been cremated, and his wife had brought the cremains up on a commercial flight to Minneapolis from Florida. And at the memorial, at the church where this was being held, they were expecting, you know, 1,000 people, wrestling fans, you know, people in the business, his fan, all that. And there were people, wrestlers, flying from Japan and other parts of the world just to be at this memorial to say goodbye to Hawk. So we go over to Dale's condo that she had up that she was staying at in Minneapolis. And we pick up Mike. There he is. He's in a jar. He's kind of like in the velvet bag kind of thing. And we carry him to Joe's truck, and we strap him in the seat between us. And we're driving around. And if Mike Hegstrand had one weakness, besides, he had many, but if one food weakness, it was McDonald's French fries. I don't know what the deal was. He had to salt them and pepper them, and he couldn't get enough McDonald's French fries. Whenever we were out doing business, we had to stop and get Mike extra large French fries. So Joe says, you know what? We got to get Mike some fries. So we literally went through the McDonald's drive-thru. We ordered something, and we got Mike an extra large order of McDonald's French fries and stuck it right on the top of the bag, and off we went to the memorial. We get to the memorial, and it was so moving. To this day, I get emotional thinking about the outpouring of love for this guy who had the biggest heart you could possibly imagine. It matched his, you know, his deltoids, his trapezius, and his chest all together. He was a great guy that had a lot of difficulties and was able to overcome them. And I think maybe because he had so many difficulties, he reached out to people to kind of make up for that. I don't know. But that's how it went. It's an incredible thing. Literally over 1,000 people in his church. And outside in the foyer of the church, they had all their wrestling belts and stuff like that displayed. Go through the whole ceremony, the whole deal, the whole memorial, the whole mass. And I'm watching people and thinking this was, you know, a great send-off for Hawk. And Joe comes up and grabs me and he says, Augie, somebody took Hawk. He's missing. I said, excuse me? Well, in all the rush and the commotion, somebody took his cremains. I couldn't believe it. So here we are, trying not to make a big deal about this, looking around and casing the crowd to see who took the cremains. It may end up on, what, on eBay, or somebody took them as a God knows what. So couldn't find them anywhere. Could not. And we had two or three other people looking. And I don't know how long it took, but eventually they found Mike. Mike's grandmother was at the service, kindly old woman, without anybody noticing, picked up her grandson's cremains, walked out the back door of the church, right down the street to her house, and she was sitting there at the table having a little chat with her grandson as the cremains were sitting on her kitchen table. It was a touching and final tribute, I think, to the guy. It was funny now. It was kind of funny then, but also very sad at the same time. So that was the last time I actually saw Joe Laurinaitis. We talked many times after that over the years. And about 3 or 4 years ago, he called me. He was working on some project and we reconnected and we tried to get moving in the same direction again. But then, you know, our time had kind of come and gone. And so I thought about him often, especially he was showing up on different YouTube videos and things like that. And there is might be Vice Channel Online, called The Dark Side of the Ring. And about a month ago, I happened to catch an episode about the Road Warriors, and it's kind of reenactment plus it's interviews, and Joe was being interviewed, and they had reenactments going as well about their time, and it was only a half-hour show, and after I watched it, I thought, you know, I got to call him, and I want to get him on the podcast, and I just want to talk because the anniversary of Mike's death was coming up and other things, and I never called him. And then I got a call when I was in Michigan with my son that Joe had passed away. And it went right through me. And it's the same thing over and over again, you know, how time comes and goes between us and how important it is to not let that happen if at all possible. And that's why, quite frankly, since we're all on borrowed time, I know I'm very well aware of that. You know, the guy was 60, I'll be 62. You know, I don't know, there was no official cause of death given. It was a natural causes. But as I always say, the cause of death is inconsequential to the cause of life, you know, how they live their lives and how we live our lives. And our cause of death doesn't really mean a lot. You know, there's a great, great emphasis given to that, but really our cause in life should be the focus. And both these guys, you know, entertained millions of people for many, many years. And one of my favorite memories of them was being at Special Olympics in Chicago. I got them to come in and be part of the lineup, and it was a, you know, Walter Payton and star-studded lineup stuff, and they were honored to be part of that. And I brought my kids, my son and my daughter, to the event. And before that, they were painting their faces like theirs were in the ring. You know, and somewhere there's a picture of these two big guys painting my kids' faces and just laughing and yucking it up, and it was great. So the reason that I felt I wanted to do this has a lot of levels for me. One is I'm going to, you know, miss not calling him. And I wish that I did. And it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda thing that I talk about myself. And I even fell into the trap of there'll always be tomorrow. And matter of fact, there may not be tomorrow nor today. The second part of it is, listen, as I've said, and this is a perfect example of it, I've never seen Democrat or Republican or Independent on a headstone. So I'm always so careful to work around the edges of this stuff because of the volatile political environment we live in now. and say, I want to be reminding you that if you died today, no one's going to care about what you thought one way or the other of the president or the challenger or Congress or all the rest of it. There's a place for that and a time for that, but not all the time and all over the place. And it's just another example of not majoring in minor things. It will go on. This country always goes on. It will, you know, we have this, these tug of war, as I always say, back and forth. That's nothing new. Maybe new because it's all over the news now, but that's not new. But what is new is that we're running out of time, you and I. And to think that just a week ago he was here and now he's not here, and that's happened with many friends of mine, is that reminder that, you know, life is a precious thing and we take it for granted. And the friendships and the relationships, it's so much easier to burn bridges sometimes than build them. And I think it takes extra effort to build them. And I think that it's worth the effort. I've been working on this international radio show for a month now. It's a daily show that is heard in New York, Washington, D.C. And my co-hosts are two rotating co-hosts from Beijing, China. And over the month, we've had a lot of great guests on and all that. But it's really the conversation we have between us that gives me the most to pause and consider, because they're the same as I am. I mean, there's a difference in age. I'm a lot older. There's a difference in gender. They're two females. And there are some cultural differences, but by and large, we're the same. And when you get past the headlines and you get to the lifelines, you start to see that people are the same everywhere. And so the stuff that divides us, I will not participate in. I can't. I don't have time. I don't have the time for that. As much as I'd like to get drawn into it, as much as I'd like to go in and mix it up, and I've done it before, at this point, I'm thinking, I'm not going to do it because it comes to nothing. So the headlines are so divisive and push people apart. Building Bridges, this radio show that I've been working on, is something that brings people together one conversation at a time. And this podcast, I hope, does that as well. So I'm thinking of Joe today. I'm thinking of Mike. And of course, my office is filled with this stuff. And I have a whole table. It's kind of like a remembrance table. I have my folks' picture there, my grandfather's picture there. I have friends of mine who passed away, a fellow named Phil, who I played high school football with, friends for most of my life, has only been gone 6 months, and other friends of mine. I have their pictures there as reminders that just because mine's not there today doesn't mean it's not going to be there someday, and that I shouldn't be wasting my time today. And I don't have a picture of Joe and Mike with us all together, but what I do have are a couple of little wrestling towels that I got about a year ago at the county fair. I think I paid $5 for them, and I thought, what do I need these for? Well, now I'm glad I have them. I see them sitting right there, and they will always be, of course, the Legion of Doom. So listen, thanks for spending time with me today. I appreciate it. Also the patience, the people are subscribing to this show. We got some great stuff coming up in the near future, but I just wanted to reiterate that, you know, that life is short, and that the least efficient way to describe someone is their political leanings. I can't even imagine just saying, I can't even imagine if all you saw in headstones were Democrat, Republican, or other, nothing about their lives, or if they'd served in the military, if we just did it that way, can you imagine how many people are next to someone they would never spend time with while they were alive when you're buried? You know, you don't even know this person. They could have been the antithesis of what you would ever think is a good person, and you're buried next to them for eternity. I get the biggest kick out of that. And we really need to work backwards to the front sometimes instead of front to the back. Be safe in your travels. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adios.